This is Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Welcome. If you walked into this garden and looked around, you'd never know you're in Southern California. There are azaleas and dahlias and lush green lawn and a dogwood tree in the back.
My yard is pretty much a very southern style of garden with it's got an English garden, and then I have a lot of my shrubbery is inspired by the southeastern United States garden. So it's a very unique and fresh mix for Southern California, very green and very wet.
Michael Austin's Southern Oasis is actually in Rosemead, about 12 miles east of downtown LA, which means this yard might look a little different in a couple of months. Starting in June, next month, 6 million Southern Californians will face new water restrictions. There's a decent chance you'll be one of them. And that means only watering your landscapes twice or even just once per week. Well, that is if you comply.
I grew up saying that you can judge a man by his lawn, so the lawn ain't going. I'm going to go before the lawn is. They're gonna take me away, and this is going to be an empty property before the lawn goes.
Okay, so then what happens? KCRW's Kaylee Wells has the story.
Let me put excessive water use aside for a second and tell you about Michael Austin's yard. You know when you walk outside and recoil at the sun reflecting off all the bright, hard surfaces of the street? Austin's dark green manicured jungle in the middle of the San Gabriel Valley made me do whatever the opposite of that is. I just didn't want to look away.
I'd like to say a yard is the reflection of who lives here, because we're given these portions of land. We own these portions of land. I think that it's our God-given duty to tend it and till it until our time is gone.
Okay, so back to the water. Austin lives here with his grandparents. He says they don't all shower daily or use a dishwasher, so it balances out that he runs his three zones of sprinklers about 10 minutes every day in the summer.
I am unapologetically a water user in this yard. I run the sprinklers in the dead of summer.
I ran those numbers through a water calculator that the Metropolitan Water District recommends. Looks like his family is using about 50% more water per person than the average, and most of it is going toward the yard. Which means this new restriction that'll likely cut his outdoor water use back to once per week is going to be pretty rough on his landscape. He says the problem isn't his water usage, it's overcrowding.
You can't fault people who've lived here their entire lives and tell them that they can't have this anymore because of an uncontrollable climate, because of God, because of the climate. That just doesn't make really any sense to me.
So he says he's protesting the restrictions. He'll keep running his sprinklers every day, and he'll pay the fines if they come. Besides, he says, what are they going to do?
If I sit here and I'm running my sprinklers, is someone going to come over and cuff me and take me away?
Okay, good point. Probably not. So far, the Upper San Gabriel Municipal Water District, which supplies Austin's water and is one of the districts facing this new restriction, hasn't ironed out those details yet. Other districts have. LADWP will charge fines if residents don't comply. If customers of the Las Virgenes Municipal Water District in the Conejo Valley violate the restriction three times, they'll install a device that restricts water flow to your house. So if consequences like that are looming, how is Austin supposed to keep his yard from dying?
That is not the question we should be asking, is how do I keep this thing that does not belong here and for which there are not enough resources?
That's Master Gardener Roger Gray. He's a certified California naturalist. He's a former middle school science teacher. And his Pasadena yard reflects that. It's a celebration of nature. It's pretty to look at. There were little purple and white and red flowers on big bushes scattered between patches of mulch. But looking at it wasn't the best part. Sometimes we'd stop to admire a hummingbird or two pollinating the flowers. And then there was the smell.
It smells like mountains, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The fragrant pitcher sage is its common name.
Wow, smells like mountains is exactly how I would describe that.
Mm-hmm.
Everything in here is native to either California or at least somewhere nearby. So they're tolerant of drought and don't need as much water. Like Austin, Gray put this landscape in about 2 years ago. Unlike Austin, he's watered these plants six times, total, in 2 years.
And you're standing in here, and some of these plants are taller than you are.
Yeah,
and we've had a drought.
Gray took advantage of Pasadena City's rebates and ripped up the lawn just before the pandemic hit in exchange for this.
The plants in here are mostly all chaparral or coastal sage scrub, and particularly the chaparral plants tend to throw deep roots looking for water. And so the more water we can put in the soil during the rainy season, the more access they'll have to it 3, 4, 5 feet down.
That's one way to solve excessive outdoor water use, but it's not something Austin will go for.
They don't look like what I like and what I go for, so it's a matter of taste, I guess.
Actually, you know what he wants? He wants to rip up the concrete driveway and replace it with an even bigger water-demanding lawn. So what happens if Austin cuts back his water? Well, Gray says the good news is it probably won't be as bad as you think.
Most people overwater all their plants all the time. Forget about the drought. One of the things in the Master Gardener group that we do all the time is to remind people you don't need to water all the time. Water less frequently and more deeply. That's better for the plants. A little sprinkle every day is terrible.
Because a lot of the sprinkler mist evaporates anyway, and after a few minutes, the water is coming too fast, so it runs off the top of the soil and into the street without soaking deep enough to reach all the roots. You know what else Austin could do? Drip irrigation. That's when you bury a hose under the soil and the water seeps into the ground, directly into the roots. Lots of people have been looking into this. It's meant good business for Jay McMullen. He owns Allstate Landscapes near Santa Clarita, and he's been designing yards for 40 years.
Today, we're putting in drip systems. We've got smart controllers. We've got moisture sensors. We've got rain devices that collect rain and turn off your irrigation timer. So many of the newer landscapes are already there.
Another option, mulch the yard.
Because the mulch is going to be able to hold in the water and not allow the sun to bake the soil, to dry out that soil.
As for the lawn, McMullen says it's time to say goodbye.
One of the problems that we have in Southern California is that for years, we've been wanting to have this lush green lawn, which is what we call a cool season lawn. People love to have that lush green lawn, but is it really what Southern California should have? Probably not.
So far, these water restrictions only apply to water agencies that get most of their water from the State Water Project, which is mostly stored in Northern California. The cities that pull their water from the Colorado River haven't been targeted yet. So the lush green lawns lining the streets of places like Beverly Hills, Burbank, and Irvine are safe. For now. For KCRW, I'm Kaylee Wells.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Well, those lawns in Beverly Hills and Burbank may be safe for now, but they have to get water from somewhere, too. Or do they? The LADWP has made it a goal to be 70% water independent by the year 2035, meaning that 70% of its users' water will come from local sources. But here's a problem. Those few times when it does rain in Southern California, there hasn't been enough of an effort to capture and store that water in aquifers underground. And not only that, a lot of that water that's below ground is contaminated with things like jet fuel. You might remember a big parcel tax in L.A. County a few years back, Measure W, that raised money to clean and capture more stormwater. But is that making a difference? Sonar Luthra is the founder of Water Canary, an L.A.-based company that helps businesses and governments identify and manage water risks. Sonar, welcome to you.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Steve.
We had a really wet month in December here in L.A. where we got 9 inches of rain or more, and billions and billions of gallons of water ran down the L.A. River and out into Long Beach Harbor. At some counts, like 30 billion gallons of water. I mean, we've been talking for years about capturing more of that fresh water. Why is there so little progress on that front?
That's a great question, Steve. Measure W, we've collected over $500 million towards from that tax. And, that money, we've not necessarily deployed all of it very quickly. So it's easy to see those numbers and think that the measure is not working. But the fact is that you can't necessarily rebuild a city's water infrastructure overnight.
We haven't even broken ground on a lot of these proposals, right? Like Measure W was money that came in starting in 2018 or whenever it took full effect. We're talking about, millions, hundreds of millions of dollars but only about $100 million has been spent, and hardly any of the actual projects have broken ground. So, I mean, what's the holdup, do you think? That's been 4 years ago since it passed.
Absolutely. You know, part of it, you know, so there's several things here. One is that we're chasing a moving target. You know, we're seeing rainfalls and we're seeing the supply side, you know, what LA depends upon is shrinking rather rapidly. And the impact that that has on the assessments for when to break ground and what projects are actually worthwhile is impacted by that directly. So I think it's fair to say that we need to be breaking ground faster, but to say that these projects, especially given the pandemic, were supposed to have broken ground by now, I think is on some level a little unfair to a process that, you know, is really designed in perpetuity to facilitate this transition, whereby we stop segmenting drinking water, wastewater, stormwater into separate silos that are treated differently, and we reintegrate these approaches. But to get there, you're talking about over 30 local water agencies. You're talking about stormwater. You're talking about LADWP. You're talking about lots of smaller smaller agencies throughout the county that supply water to smaller water systems. And so to coordinate all that together, it's hard enough to do when you can have meetings in person. It's another thing when you're still dealing with things like social distancing. You're still dealing with, you know, a city that's struggling to come back. But I think that there is a lot of room here for Measure W to deliver. But I think it's important to keep in mind what it's not necessarily designed to address. One of the biggest sources of water that remains untapped in Los Angeles and throughout California, comes from the possibility of just recycling human wastewater and directly reusing it, what we call potable reuse. It can, you know, easily double a water supply in terms of what's available. It can save a lot of energy. It uses far less energy than something like desal, which is, I think, about three times as much energy. So there's, you know, that's a place where you have technology that could be delivering for us to expand our water supply. But we don't really have a policy in place for how to do that properly.
You're going to have to convince a lot of people, Sonar, though, that, you know, the whole toilet to tap thing is something that's doable and something that they want to do, right? I mean, because a lot of people are turned off by that.
They are. And I think that goes to another issue here, which is really demand side, issues in terms of, you know, we spend a lot of time looking at ways to provide people more carrots. A lot of people have, you know, realized that changing their landscaping and doing things like using native species actually looks beautiful, and that those programs are working quite well for helping people, you know, replace their turf on their lawns and reduce their water usage. But on the other side, there are certain, you know, compromises that people are going to have to make. And I don't necessarily, you know, think that should, you know, fall onto the Angelenos who, you know, struggle the most and are the most vulnerable, which sometimes is what happens. And so what we really need is to kind of be thinking through how do we enforce restrictions in ways that actually have teeth and actually have consequences.
Isn't there a lot of water in the state going to agriculture? I mean, 80%, I think, is the number, right, to the Central Valley.
There is, on some level, other water that is going, you know, towards growing food that is not consumed in the state. And although I'm a big supporter of agriculture in California, what we really haven't been able to do quite yet is come up with the right set of incentives, the right, you know, combination of carrots and sticks to make ag more efficient. Unfortunately, when we introduce things like drip irrigation into agriculture and ways to, you know, essentially grow more crop per drop, what we also see is that leads to many growers just growing more food. They can make more money the more efficient their water is, and that doesn't necessarily translate into enough water left over for nature or enough water left over for households. And unfortunately, that, you know, the burden of that often comes down directly on vulnerable communities that are adjacent to growing practices in the Central Valley. So, you know, we really need to be rethinking water in a much more holistic way, because there is more than enough water for Angelenos to live. Whether there's enough water for us to maintain our forests, whether there's enough water to prevent wildfires, a lot of those choices, a lot of those decisions that lie ahead of us have everything to do with how much water we're willing to continue giving to agriculture, and whether we're willing to put, you know, real restrictions on how much water can be used.
You got to eat, though, right? I mean, agriculture is a big part of California's economy. The Central Valley feeds a lot of people in America and around the world.
And I'm not arguing that it shouldn't continue to do so. What is difficult to compel is to make that agriculture industry more efficient and to maybe set some limits on how much food could be grown in a year based on what it's doing to groundwater levels and availability in the state. And that is a very, that is as Gordian a knot as we really have in this state. But it's one that the longer we wait, the less groundwater we will have to continue to support agriculture in this state. You know, one thing I should say, just to be clear, is that, you know, water in the state is jurisdictionally divided. Not everyone has access to water from certain projects, even if there are pipes that might be able to divert water from one place to another. And so that's the other piece of this, is a lot of it's rooted in things like water rights and, you know, essentially 19th century allocations that have absolutely nothing to do with the actual supply itself, if that makes sense.
It makes sense. You know, residents now across L.A., Sonar, have these restrictions on water use. I mean, everybody's having to sort of cut back or are being asked to cut back. The restrictions seem to come and go. Some years are wetter than others. Climate change obviously has a lot to do with this. I mean, what kind of long-term changes do you think residents and water districts should be making right now?
You know, I think the biggest concern I have about the future, you know, of LA where water is concerned is just the cost of living. The city of LA just a few months ago, you know, issued $275 million in utility debt relief to folks in the city who have been struggling. Now, to those who don't understand, if you don't pay your water bill, you can lose your house. And I mean, this can be a matter of a few hundred dollars that leads to that, simply because that debt is considered senior to whatever you might owe on your mortgage. So what we're looking at potentially, if we don't really address the equity issues surrounding rebuilding LA's water infrastructure, is a higher cost of living, a greater burden, you know, borne by those communities that have really done the least to produce climate change or really are using the least amount of water in the city. The other thing I would say tangential to that is that, you know, we have a very high percentage of renters in LA, you know, 54%. Of households are renters. So when we issue things like you can get a rebate if you change your washer dryer, you can get low volume toilets. These are great programs, but they're not things that renters can take advantage of. So, you know, there needs to be some way of figuring out how to compel landlords to take advantage of those types of programs to pass those benefits on, without necessarily increasing rents.
I want to thank you for your time. Sonar Luthra, founder of Water Canary, which is an LA-based company that helps businesses and governments identify and manage water risks. Sonar, thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to KCRW and Greater LA, grown and fueled by you. Say watered by you, right? We're like a plant, the seedling. So how about a contribution right now during our spring fundraiser? We know it's a tough time, but if you have the means, help us out so we can keep doing what you depend on, what you enjoy, what you love. We're a little behind, got to admit, a little behind at this point in the drive. So if you can dig deep and give by tonight, you'll also have a chance to win a brand new iPhone when you donate. So a little incentive there. KCRW.com/give. and thank you for your support of public radio. Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Before you leave us, one more thing. For the month of April, which was National Poetry Month, KCRW's Young Creators Project set to find five talented young poets and storytellers out of a long list of young people who submitted their work to us. We want you now to hear those poets on Greater LA and on KCRW's Morning Edition this week. And today, we're going to hear from the youngest of our young creators. Her name is Jacqueline Chow. She is 11 years old, and she attends Highland Oaks Elementary School in Arcadia. She likes to write and read about bugs, as you'll hear. Her poem is called Ode to the Ground, and it was written for a fifth grade project.
You hold me up so I stand tall. You try not to let me fall. You support me everywhere I go, and everywhere I go, I know that you'll always be there for me. You catch me when I stumble and trip. You hold me tight in your powerful grip. You let my shoes trip on your head with no complaint to be said, even if I wanted some. You move me along, sprinting fast. You help me go, others pass. My pounding feet meet you every step I take. You try not to let yourself wake, though sometimes you can't control the odds. You allow the bugs to make their home in you and me to come. Through all the grass and dirt and rocks and all the tiny boars, locks, to find the bugs and hold them. You welcome sunshine, welcome it in, and store it like a storage bin. You soak up the sun that makes you hot, and let me lie there, though I ought to be practicing cello. Without you, everyone would be floating in the watery sea, or floating up in the air, or the core of the earth. It's harder there, harder than the source of the sun. I love you, you're the best. Better than bugs, I must confess. I owe my life as I know it to you, and I'm thankful for all the things you do for me. Thank you,
Bob. Jacqueline Chow, hi. How are you?
Good.
Good, good. How long have you been writing poetry?
I think since coronavirus started, so I think that's about 2 years.
Wow. Was it because of the pandemic? Maybe you had a little more time. Is that why?
It was because I took a poetry class and I got interested.
What kind of poetry class was it? You took the poetry class online?
It was a poetry class that my after school gave, and it was part of writing, so we just did a poetry session, and it was online.
Tell us a little bit about Ode to the Ground, because this is about bugs, right?
One part is about bugs.
One part is about bugs.
It doesn't really say in the poem, but I'm meaning like roly-polies and beetles and bees.
What is it about bugs that you like so much?
I like that they have all these like amazing adaptations, like the Madagascar hissing cockroach. Even though it's really small, it can hiss like a snake and it can climb glass. And I also like that, well, I think they're really cute. I like that a lot of people just don't like them. But I think that like if you get to know them really close up, then they're really fun to play with. And I really like that you can find them just anywhere, and you can play with them, and you can just let them claw on your hands, and then you can just put them back.
What about spiders? Do you like spiders?
I like spiders, but I don't really like spiders crawling on me. I just like looking at them.
You like looking at them, yeah. What kind of books do you like to read, Jacqueline?
Reading fiction books and fantasy books about like what ifs and anything could happen, and I also like reading poetry books because I like poems.
Well, you have so many years ahead of you. What is it you want to do? I mean, when you get older, do you have any idea what you want to be when you quote unquote grow up?
I want to either publish a collection of my poems, or I want to be an entomologist, or I want to be an animal conservationist.
Entomologist. Okay, you want to work with bugs. Of course you do. Or animal conservationist. I mean, helping animals, saving animals. Are you working on any poems right now?
Just work on poems when I think of them, and I don't really work on, like, plan it out.
Well, we really like this one, and we really like you. Thank you, Jacqueline.
Thank you.
11-year-old Jacqueline Chow. She joined us as part of KCRW's Young Creators Project. You can read her poem, Ode to the Ground, at our website, kcrw.com/greaterLA. Thank you so much, Jacqueline. Yay, you did it. Yay.
Thank you.
How sweet. That's going to do it for us today. Next week, an experiment in Boyle Heights, how to stop displacement of small business there. Plus, school came back this year for sure, but for a lot of teachers and parents and students, the connection to school did not. You'll hear that next week on GLA. And a program note going forward, next time you hear us on Monday, we're going to be on at a new time on KCRW, Monday through Thursdays at 2:30 and 6. Before and after, all things considered, right here on KCRW, 2:30 and 6 o'clock right here. No matter what time we're on the radio, though, you can find us anytime online and subscribe to the podcast. So instead of you coming to us, we come to you. KCRW.com/GLA or get the podcast wherever you get them. Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Rebecca Ludman, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all helped with this evening's episode. I'm Steve Chiatakis on a Thursday night. Thank you for your time and attention and your ears. Have a great night.